I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Community Focus.
WEEI is proud to be part of the community. The following WEEI public service broadcast is brought to you by the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts.
Community Focus.
You're listening to Community Focus with Dr. Darnell Williams from the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts.
Good morning, everyone. This is Darnell Williams, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts, welcoming you once again to a community-focused program. And it's one where we have the opportunity to bring thoughts and opinions about what's happening to us, not only as a city, what's happening to us, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and things that are happening to us across the nation. And for those of you who are listening and are not familiar, the Urban League is celebrating May 16th, 1919, the Urban League, or at that time was called the Boston Urban League, was established. And so this year in May 16, 2019, we're going to be celebrating our 100 years of existence. For those of you who do not know what the Urban League does, let me just give you a snapshot. Our mission, which we've been doing for 100 years, is to deliver programs and services that aim to increase the self-reliance of African Americans and other people of color, to overcome racial, social barriers, economic inequalities, sexual and domestic violence. And these are the speed bumps. These are the barriers that prevent people from gaining meaningful employment, where they can be gainfully engaged, where they can take care of themselves, they can support their families, and they, in fact, will be able to support their communities. The short version of what the Urban League does is that we empower communities and changing lives. If those of you who have sons or daughters or nieces or nephews, you need to know that every Tuesday and Wednesday at 1 p.m., we offer, I would call them informational sessions. So every Tuesday and Wednesday at 1 p.m., you can come out and find out that we have a customer service and sales training. We have computer literacy. We have a digital and marketing program, as well as a coding boot camp, where you are able to gain the skills and the competencies that you will need in order to move into the marketplace. We try to wrap our services around you. Now, typically, we would have a guest in the studio this morning, but I want to hope and pray that for the next few moments that I will be able to stream my thoughts and opinions about a range of issues pertaining to where we are today. And what I thought would be appropriate as we celebrated the would have been the 90th birthday of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And as you know, and this radio station and others, I mentioned last year, I had the good fortune to go down to Memphis, Tennessee, to visit at the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. And one of the things that we came away with, I believe, Kevin Peterson and several other, Reverend Art Gordon and Leonard Lee and I, we were the four amigos that went down from Boston and went down to celebrate and to highlight and actually remember where were we when the news came out. Some of them at the time, the names that I mentioned, Leonard Lee and Reverend Art Gordon and Kevin, some of them probably weren't even born. So I'm probably one of the only ones standing there. I was 16 at the time. And we cried like most everybody else across this nation that they've killed our leader. They killed the person who, in fact, was there, who was championing the causes for those sanitation workers down in Memphis, talking about I am a man. And they were sanitation workers who had went on strike, and they were getting less pay than their white counterparts. And the assassin's bullet maybe have struck down the clarion caller, but has not dampened his message. And in fact, I believe that Dr. King's message is so much more powerful today than it was. And so when we think about what that really means, is that we really have to think about what Dr. King stood for and what he was trying to accomplish in his crusades across this country, and what it meant to me as a 16-year-old kid in the projects from Gary, Indiana, knowing that there was this man that was out there talking and crossing the country, speaking out against the war in Vietnam, which, and eventually I ended up serving during the Air Force. I served during the Vietnam conflict, something that I didn't have all the geopolitical understanding, didn't understand how they were hiding the cost of the war. President Johnson is going to be recognized and noted later in this conversation, but really where they were hiding the cost of the Vietnam War in the Social Security budget. So they didn't tell you all of the number of individuals that lost their lives and how much money it was costing us for. And they never actually called it a war. It was the Vietnam conflict. We had World War I, World War II. We had the Korean War, Afghanistan and Iraq War, but Vietnam was considered the conflict. But when you think about what it is that we talk about when we think about Martin Luther King, we have to really open up our thoughts and I believe with prayer. And when we ask God, they said, are we worthy to stand before you, God? Are we worthy to even be able to see beyond our own hands and our own feet, our own idiosyncrasies and our selfishness? Do we have the capacity that we're worthy to speak any of the words that will come out of our mouths that will really speak to the conditions if our hands are not clean and if our heart is not clean? And even if our motives that are coming from outside or within us really will allow us to really deal with some of the challenges that we have. Because I really want to let the listening audience know, I really thank God that we have weaknesses. Because if we didn't have weaknesses and faults and shallow areas within our lives, then God's strength could never show up, because we will be standing on this pedestal of arrogancy, thinking that it's because of I'm good and I give away my worldly goods and I try to help those that are widows and the homeless and those that are incarcerated. And so we ask God to consecrate these words and grant us that his presence will show up today, to allow us to be able to speak these words, because this dreamer, that the beneficiaries of the dream. And what Martin Luther King's holiday, his birthday was just reflected on the 15th. And really what it is, it's a day for us to step back and do a reflection. Just like when you go into the doctor's office on your annual visit, they want to take your weight, your blood pressure. They want to take your blood samples and make sure and check all of your vitals. Really, Martin Luther King Jr., Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday or holiday, as has been stated, is a day on, not a day off. But really what it should be is just like your annual checkup. It is an opportunity for us to look at, where are we, America? Where are we in relationship to the words that have been articulated by Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, not only in his death, but in his life, about nonviolence? And before I go on, I want to make sure I give a shout out to all of those young people who stood in the way of harm's life when they stood in front of the water hoses and the dogs and the police brutality down in Alabama. We give all of the luminaries of confidence, or give them our accolades. But those young people were the ones who really saved the civil rights movement. And oftentimes they get lost in the shuffle. But when I come back to where Dr. Martin Luther King stood, he really used the basis of our Constitution. And the Declaration of Independence was our promise. And the Constitution was the fulfillment. But if you look at the Constitution and what it says, we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty, to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. And if Dr. King were alive today and he was as of 90 years of age, I think that he would take a step back and said, it's the right thing to do to give us a chance to see what are we doing as a nation. We know that you can't drink the water in Flint, Michigan. We've had massacres of individuals in various schools and the gay club down the post down in Orlando, Florida. Airports, Chicago beatings, looking at the individuals who lost their lives at the hands of police officers. We've even lost police officers at the hands of people that have turned their guns toward the police officers and killing the people who are sworn to protect them. Our relations, race relations in this country is in a toilet. We have elected leaders at the national level who have used race-baiting language to divide us as a nation. So how can this Constitution be used as the basis? And it should be. So I would never go against what the Constitution says. I'm only reflecting what Dr. King and others have done. Hold us accountable for achieving what the Constitution says. Where are we as a black man when I shop, when I even go into my own apartment? Where are we when I'm trying to clean up, I'm selling water? I mean, there's so many issues that go on. And so these comments are not meant to divide us, but to acknowledge that we have a gulf in America. And it's not just black people and white folks. It's the same issues are applying to those of Asian descent or Latino, or if your sexual orientation is different than someone else. This nation has really found a very crafty way of dividing us. And really, the measurement came back to Dr. King, and I think it was Hubert Humphrey who was credited, but there was an African male who came up with this quote: how do we measure our government? We measure our government how we treat those that are in the dawn of life. Those are children. Those that are in the twilight of life, those are our elderly. And those that are in the shadows of life, those are the homeless. When we think about all of the federal employees, all 800,000 of them that are on furlough, not able to pay their bills, not able to make the choice between food and medication, don't know, many of them living from paycheck to paycheck, and we're stuck in a stalemate over a wall. Just recently, the news clips were showing multiple tunnels that are underground that were discovered. So even in the face of existing walls, folks who are trying to get into the country, not only illegally, but also in terms of drug trade, they are digging tunnels. Now, these are the Cadillac version of tunnels. This ain't just no tunnel you crawl through. You can stand up, and they got running lights. I'm not going to exaggerate and say they got running water, but they got running lights corded down through the tunnels. So these are down on the Texas border where these sophisticated tunnels allowing people to walk through, not crawl through, not try to dodge the infrared or do the border patrol. But they are doing these things because they want to have a better life. I'd rather for them to come in the legal way, but people are going to do what they have to do in order to survive. So the question that gets missed in this conversation: every Martin Luther King birthday, they paid a sign that I have a dream deeply rooted in the American dream, that my children will be judged by the content of their character, not by the color of their skin. And we reduced Dr. King to that statement. And so Madison Avenue has very conveniently placed Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King in this marketing media piece where we can have and pat ourselves on the back that we've overcome. We've gone further backwards in terms of our race relations. But Martin Luther King would know that it's profitable to say that have we made progress as a nation? Absolutely. The things in Boston are no longer what they were in 1973 and 1974 when the hostilities between those who lived in Southie and those who live in Roxbury, those contentious days have no longer plagued us. We're moving forward. We're making racial progress. We're not making economic progress as much as I like to see, But I don't want to get too far off track because there's so many issues that we can deal with. But when we think about Dr. King and his life and his sacrifice, it should mean more to us as a nation than just one speech. I think Dr. King would constantly and deliberately prod us and ask us penetrating questions. What are we doing for this beloved community? How is it better for our collective efforts? And what are we doing to uplift our fellow human beings that don't look like us, don't smell like us, don't speak the same language, they don't have the same ethnicity, they have a gender difference than we have? What about those with disabilities and their sexual orientation? Are we doing anything to lift them up, or are we demonizing them because they're different? When you're xenophobic, when you are racist, when you are biased, Congressman King, first time in a long time, Congress has done something right. They stripped the Iowa congressman from serving on any Republican community because he had a New York Times interview stating that he didn't know when white nationalism and white superiority were considered bad things. That is, I mean, that's a meathead talking. That's not a congressman. That's a meathead congressman talking about when did white superiority and white nationalism become a bad thing. It was a bad thing from the start, and it has consequences. And if you don't get it and don't understand it, so Congress stripped him from all his committee assignments. And then also, I think Clyde Clyburn introduced a resolution that was voted on 432-1 to put a resolve on the table to make sure that they say that those words of white supremacy and white nationalism should be stricken from this body because it does not represent who we are as a nation. So we are challenged, listening audience. If you're tuning in to the Community Focus program, this is Dr. Darnell Williams talking, and I didn't give that title to myself, but I accept it. But we want you to recognize that as we celebrate and uplift Reverend Dr. King, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., his protests and every protest that they did was designed with a strategy in mind. And the end goal of those strategies was to change America to be better. And for those who would criticize Black Lives Matter, we are wrong. Black Lives Matter is an outgrowth for young people being engaged because of the conditions. No different than what we did in 1968 or 1967 with the riots. We had been set up. And therefore, when those riots had transpired in over 40 to 50 cities across the nation, America got a wake-up call. And we're going to come to this at some point in this conversation. I want to talk about the Kerner Commission report. That here we are 51 years later. But I want to stay with Dr. King for a moment. I'll probably deal with the Kerner Commission report and what it meant and how it still impacts us today. But that strategy was to change things. And his Dr. King's activities and his words awakened the conscience of America. Through his nonviolent campaigns throughout the South, and later, he extended up to the North as well. His nonviolent campaigns drew the fresh insights from the life and works and commitment of Mahatma Gandhi and Jesus Christ. Enduring the beatings, going to prison, and I'll just punctuate right now that when we were in Memphis, I had the good fortune to be able to sit in the cell that was moved from Birmingham jail to be in the Memphis museum, so you can actually sit on the bunk and look out the window or look out the cell with the viewpoint with your hand on your chin, mimicking what Dr. King had to go through while he was writing the letter from a Birmingham jail. We stood in front of the bombed out Greyhound bus from the Freedom Riders who went down there to register people to vote, sat at the counter were those students who sat there to make sure that racial segregation was not served when, whether it was either in a restaurant or in a hospital or on a beach. These people put their lives on the line. Also, we said that we stood out there with signs that says, "I am a man," recognizing that we stood in solidarity, not only then, but now, where we were with those immigrants. So today, we honor Dr. King by affirming his philosophy of peace. He affirmed his philosophy for love for your fellow man, your fellow human being, his love for justice and freedom, and seek that we do to keep his dream alive by bringing people together from all walks of life who exemplify good character and common sense to leave this world better than we found it. Dr. King understood that civil rights movement must be based on some future change. He understood that he had to deliver on some things. He wanted us to remember him also as a drum major for justice, for peace, and for righteousness. Because he made a statement, he says, "I'm not leaving a lot of luxurious things behind." But he said, "What I would leave behind is a committed life." And there's no more important time than now. He also said there are going to be some difficult days ahead. I don't know if he envisioned the difficult days that we're looking at right now, when we have individuals not only on the Supreme Court, not only within 1600 in Pennsylvania Avenue, those that are in Congress, those that occupy law enforcement and elected positions, that are causing us to be still jelly beans stuck at the bottom of the bag, left at the back of the bus, paying the highest interest rates, being denied loans, even though we have comparable track records for paying back the loan than other folks. So our system is still jacked up in so many ways. I'm not going to minimize the progress that we've made. But when we were in the 60s and the 70s and we were chiming that we wanted Ruby to go to a school, Supreme Court said in the Brown v. Board of Education that with all deliberate speed, people would rather shut down a school system rather than have black people educated next to their children. I'm not going over these things just to get us all flared up, because Black History Month is always a challenge for me, because we see things that remind us how bad it was. And then we have people who stand in front of us in microphones and try to tell us, "What do y'all want? I want justice. When do I want it? I want it now. I want to be treated as equal just like anybody else." But yet when I go into a store and I get stopped by a law enforcement official, I don't get treated like I'm part of this nation. I get treated like I'm something less than. And so Dr. King was fighting, thinking that he was not just speaking to black people. I believe he was speaking to all of us as a nation and to the world stage, because he really wanted to talk about the triple evils that are among us. There was poverty. Do you know what it means to be poor? That you don't have the means to eat on a, it's called a food desert, or it's really a food, it's not an oasis by any stretch of the means. People are hungry. Children go to hungry. A week ago, we had a person on here, Aaron McAleer, that was talking about the food bank and how much they are doing to make sure that people can have a meal. That problem can be fixed. But to be poor, and to be poor in Boston, to be poor in the Commonwealth, to be homeless in Massachusetts, in Boston, that is a very difficult state to be in. And I'm not even addressing the opiate addiction and those that are caught up in drugs, because they're poor. And if you have an alcohol dependency, because you're poor, you can't afford to pay rent. Now, we're celebrating, and I'm happy that the numbers have risen to get $12 an hour. But if you do $12 an hour times 40 hours a week times 52 weeks, you're going to come up with somewhere around $17,000, $18,000 a year. And that's before taxes. But can you afford to pay the rent to live in Boston? I would say dare so. Everybody in the house has to have a job because the average rent is somewhere between $1,800 to $2,300 a month. So even if you're making $12, you need to be making somewhere like $25 to $30 an hour in order to be able to afford to live. And so people who are poor and below the poverty line, they make difficult choices. They have to buy food that's affordable, but is not necessarily healthy. They cannot think about what you're talking about, entertainment. My entertainment is I come home from work, I get to work, I got to pay for transportation, I got to pay for Medicare, I got to pay for medications, and I'm making very difficult choices. Even the elderly, and even when folks retire, they are not making proper calculations that they are not only by themselves, can't afford the taxes on the property. That's called being poor. You don't have, and if you have a $500 or $400 emergency expense in the house, you are not going to be able to deal with it. And the individuals that are working for the government, the TSA folks, the Coast Guards, all the folks in the various cabinet areas within the presidential power of the United States, put these people back to work. Their families have no dime, no nickel in this fight about border security or a wall. That does nothing to do with them, and you're using them as a leverage to say, even when the Republicans were in charge for the last 2 years of both the Senate, the House, and the White House, you didn't say anything about a wall. They put in $1.3 billion in the budget that was going towards the wall. But then when Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and the other folks who came out in the right-wing media said that you can't back off on a campaign promise, you threw 800,000 families under the bus so that you can get a wall and get the money for a wall. We are better than that. Get those people back to work so they can take care of their families. And then the other threat is racism. Now, let's make sure that we're real clear what racism is. Racism is a disease of the heart and the mind that somebody told you that you were far more superior than that person who did not look like you. And so therefore, I'm here to remind you that white superiority is wrong. And clearly, there's some folks who are on the national stage who are not superior to any of us. And by their actions and by their words and by their deeds, that just because you have money and power and position does not give you class. It tells me that you can be poor and you can be uneducated and you don't have the necessary means to make life happen in a sweet way for you. But that doesn't mean that you won't have quiet dignity. That means that you can walk with your head up because whatever it is that you're doing it with an honest day's work. You're paying by the rules. You're paying your taxes. You're trying to lead by example. Take care of your kids and be responsible. That's what it means to be able to walk, whether you're black, brown, red, or yellow. Those are the things that make us up. And before I close, I want to make sure that the other triple threat is militarism. Out of our $1.3 trillion or $1.4 trillion budget, $647 billion is towards the military. Now, when we bring that up, if I work for the Office of Management and Budget and we talk about the military's budget, I would be considering. I'm not complaining. The challenge that we have is that when we increase by $47 billion for the military, that $47 billion is coming from all the other areas within the budget. And therefore, they want to. There are those in the government who want to see the government smaller, not in our lives, not intrusive, less regulation. But then we got a whole lot of things that we have to deal with, which means environment, protection, public safety, food inspection, health. All of those issues are the ones that are going to be in. Food stamps, SNAP, all of those things come into this. If you're just tuning in the Community Focus program, I'm streaming. Dr. D is in the house, talking about Dr. King's triple threats, triple evils. We're going to come back and resume this conversation, but I want you to know that my heart, my life, and my voice will be used to elevate these issues on the Community Focus program.
Community Focus.
Thanks for listening to Community Focus with Dr. Darnell Williams. Be sure to tune in next week for another segment of Community Focus.
Community Focus.
This is Sports Radio 93.7, WEEI and WEEI.com, Boston.
Community Focus.
WEEI is proud to be part of the community. The following WEEI public service broadcast is brought to you by the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts.
Community Focus.
You're listening to Community Focus with Dr. Darnell Williams from the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts.
Good morning, everyone. This is Darnell Williams, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts, welcoming you once again to a community-focused program. And it's one where we have the opportunity to bring thoughts and opinions about what's happening to us, not only as a city, what's happening to us, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and things that are happening to us across the nation. When I think about poverty, when I think about unemployment, and when people say we have the lowest unemployment in 40 years, 2.4%, but I would ask you to go back to that same report and look at what the unemployment rate that's in the Black and the Latino community and find out that those numbers are much higher. In terms of, we look at 18 to 26 and 26 and above, our unemployment rates in the inner cities are higher. When you think about homelessness, our homelessness and poverty rates have increased. We are worse off as a nation in terms of poverty. You do the numbers there. I have them in the Kerner's report, which I do. But that we had less people who were in poverty in 1968 of African-American descent than we do today. We're worse off in terms of the poverty index. We're worse off in terms of homelessness. We are worse off in malnutrition and food subsidies or food access for people. The illiteracy rate, infant mortality, and urban decay. It should be it should not be an exaggeration to say that when I go to Boston, I go to Chicago, I go to Houston, to Los Angeles. When I go to Liberty City down in Miami, I go to Baltimore, Washington, D.C., Detroit, St. Louis, any one of those cities that I name, Gary, Indiana, etc., there is something about where these communities are that is a pattern. And if we were to look at the housing issues, which I'll bring up under the Kerner Report, I will get to that, I trust. Trust me, they all look alike. Nobody, you're riding in the car, you can see where the Black community starts and where it ends. You can see where the barrio starts and where it ends. And you can tell it by the composition of the stores, the restaurants, the churches, the number of churches, the number of chiropractor shops, the number of fast food joints, the number of liquor stores, things that you see in greater concentration in our communities. But then as soon as you cross over into the well-manicured, where they have the fences and the gates and the bushes that would distinguish their houses, you don't see those same concentration of restaurants. Why is that? I'm going to deal with that. But that's what I want you to know, that militarism, that racism, and that poverty, they're all by design. I'm in and you're out. Dr. King said, and not he didn't say it, but he quoted it, a house divided cannot stand. When we think about this, I have given you some things around the federal budget, and all you got to do, whatever number I'm giving to you, just add 12 zeros to it. That's how you get to $1 billion. I can count it. I don't have it, but I can count it. And so when we think about what we need to do, we have to think about the tax cut that just was passed in 2017 that was cut for the top 1, 2% of individuals. But when they tried to sell it, they said it was going to help the middle class. How is that working out? Have you seen the benefits from that tax cut? I just stopped by the radio station to bring these things up to you so you don't get lulled to sleep that they want to bring you into a store and want you to be able to say that on Martin Luther King's Day, I want you to go out and buy something, put you further in debt. I'm not talking against the retailers. I'm talking about you. I'm talking about you and your decisions to make sure that if you're going to spend what you don't have. And if you put it on your credit card, you got to pay interest. And then if you lose your job or you miss a paycheck, you're behind the Jimmy fix. So I'm just trying to give you some truth and share the evidence. The coded messages. When the reconstructed white supremacy traditions that still haunts America today, as they are increasing. Low-income families and the working poor have been hit harder with these constant and equally stubborn economic hardships. I got to slow down because sometimes my tongue gets ahead of me. If you're just tuning in to the Community Focus program, I want to remind you that the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts have information sessions on Tuesday and Wednesdays of every week from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. to tell you about how to get a job, to diversify the workforce in the Boston marketplace. But back to the issue at hand. America, we have the highest living standard in the world. There's no way like the American way. But will our government find the moral courage and compass to respond to the children who are in need? Will they have the moral compass to deal with the elderly and the homeless? I think it was FDR says, our challenge is not to give to those who have much. Our challenge, and because they have what they need. But our challenge is how do we make sure that we give to those who have need more? That is what our assignment is. We have a government that money is the milk of politics. If you don't have the money to play, you can't pay. To pay, you ain't got to pay. Money and lobbyists run our government, and they design the very laws to protect their interests. You might be good for a vote, but then when it comes down to having access, I think you have to stand in line and take a ticket. We're outgunned and we're outnumbered. So when we think about these things, we have to think about how do we rise above corporate deflection. Now, some would call that corporate irrational exuberance, that most of the jobs, we have to be mindful that artificial intelligence is on the horizon. No, it's already here, and they're replacing you in the various jobs. Well, I'm just here to remind you, artificial intelligence don't shop at the mall. Artificial intelligence don't go to the grocery stores, the local retails. Artificial intelligence will replace you so they automate the job and that will increase the profit margins at the bottom line. But then you are trying to figure out in a service sector society, we are a country built of string of shopping malls. And we are being used in the service sector industries, in the financial industries. But if you don't have a gainful and a meaningful job to keep pace with where this is going, artificial intelligence is going to help, but is also going to displace. How do we rise above deceit? How do we rise above power? How do we rise above those that are in power that will use their position of power to exert sexual pleasure on others? Male or female, it doesn't matter if you're in position, it's power dynamics is dominating our society. And when we start to answer these questions both individually and collectively, then we will move this beloved community to a better place. Then and only then we will be able to occupy the high moral ground, take righteous action, and like Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., we will leave a committed life behind. And if you don't do that, then all you are just the complainers. So I want you to be able to look at this and look at these words, and I'm going to give you this one more prayer, and then I'm going to shift to the Kerner Report. God, let our eyes look towards you rather than pride or arrogance. Let our tongues speak truth rather than lies. Let our hands not kill innocent folks. And that also means don't kill people's spirits. Even if you may not like their suggestion or their idea, you don't have to use your position and power to kill their spirit. Your job is to really should be, how do I lift people up? Let our hearts not plot evil deeds, but rather let us plan for the good that benefits other people. Let our feet not race to do wrong, not walk in the pathway of evil men or women. Let us not contemplate that they want to bring harm upon someone else, that they want to carve out and dig a hole for somebody else because they don't like the way that person. Well, I'm here to remind you that Jesus Christ was despised. He was rejected. He was acquainted with grief, and they esteemed him not. But yet it pleased the Father that he would suffer and became the chief cornerstone. And he became the way into eternal life for those of us who believe. A stumbling block to others, but enabling to those who believe in the word. Let us not be false witnesses where we pour out lies and sow discord among our family members. I just stopped by to say this morning that Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King would be saddened if he were to look at the state of America, look at where we are in relation to people who are poor, who can't afford to have a roof over their head and have 3 square meals a day, educate their children, provide them with some opportunities so they can travel and see the world. These are the things that challenge us. And then when I think about 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, these are not my words, but Bill Maher says it best. He said he presented an exhaustive list where Trump seems to pick out on black folks. He says he has a vendetta for some reason. He called 1 billion people who live in, I apologize for the language of my listeners. He says 1 billion people living in Africa, they live in a shithole. The Colin Kaepernick, he says he used some words. I can't use those words, but you know what they are. They were not nice. When he took the knee, LeVar Ball, he talked about President Barack Obama, called about Erica Holder. He talked about the widow from the failed raid in Niger when she was in the car with the congresswoman. He talked about the Central Park Five when Steph Curry said he's not going to the White House. The UCLA basketball players when they were arrested in China. Talked about Whoopi Goldberg and April Ryan and the entire NFL and the cast of Hamilton. I don't need to have him tell me what he thinks. He's already told us what he thinks. And he don't have my good pleasure for me to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in this nation. That's the problem that we have. Now to the Kerner Commission. Now here we are, 51 years later. And some of you who are just tuning in, this is Dr. D on the mic. I want to make sure that you understand there are a couple books that I think it is very important for you to have, and if you don't have them, to go out there to get them. One is the Kerner Report. The second one is The Color of Law, and then Healing Our Divided Society. Those three books brought together will help you understand if we have made progress or no progress. But I don't want you to take my words for it because people say, man, this guy's, he's just beating us up, talking about stuff he don't know what he's talking about. Well, let me use the Kerner Report, and I'm going to use the actual words in the summary. And for those of you who don't know, the National Advisory Commission on Civil Disorders, known as the Kerner Commission, and its chair, Governor Otto Kerner Jr. from Illinois. It was an 11-member commission established by President Lyndon Baines Johnson, Executive Order 11365, to investigate the causes of the 1967 race riots in the United States to provide the recommendations for the future. They had a simple question. What happened? Why did it happen? And what do we need to do to prevent it from happening again? That was what the Kerner Commission's challenges were. And on July 28, 1967, there was still rioting in Detroit at the time. Civil unrest in the cities across the Los Angeles and Chicago and Newark. And I still even have at the house, when they had on the cover of Life magazine, a little black boy killed laying in the street with blood all around him from the riots that are in Newark. Still have those big magazines of Life magazine, still have them today, because they are what I call keepsakes to remind me that I was fortunate enough not to be one of those little black kids laying in the street because of violence or the violence or because of a bullet or because of drugs. The commission issued the report, and it was released in 1968, 7 months after its investigation. And it was released prior to the assassination of April 4th in 1968, before Dr. King's assassination. But Dr. King made a very prophetic statement. He said, "That report is a physician's warning of approaching death with a prescription for life." In short, in layman's term, that report had all the things that we needed to do to address the shortcomings in America as related to African Americans and people of color. But LBJ dissed the report because he felt that they didn't give him enough credit for his war on poverty. And so therefore the report was never, ever implemented. And so the problem, we know what the problems are. We've been studying this stuff for 51 years. We know what's wrong. All y'all got to do is ask us. We got people who have money, and you give money to institutions to study the problem. Come talk to us. Talk to us at the Urban League. Talk to us at the NAACP. Talk to us at the United Negro College Fund. Talk to somebody who's living on SNAP and on food stamps or getting subsidy for living in America. We will tell you what the problems are. Tell somebody who's got to work 3 and 4 jobs and can't afford rent. We already know what the answer to the question is. We need more money and more resources. But I'm not looking for a handout. I'm looking for an opportunity. The Urban League was founded on the premise, not alms, but opportunity. Our job is to train people to be prepared. Whitney Young said it best. I'd rather be prepared for an opportunity that never comes. But if an opportunity comes, I want to be prepared. I'll say it again. I'd rather be prepared for an opportunity that never comes, but have an opportunity to come, and I'm not prepared. We want to prepare people. Nobody wants to be born poor. Nobody wants to stay poor. But our system and the way it's jimmy fixed against people to keep them in debt, keep them illiterate and uneducated, keep them in low-paying jobs, keep them where they're paying higher fees to live, the cost of groceries, the cost of car insurance, cost of any kind of insurance, cost of gas, cost of everything that you got to pay living in urban areas is higher than it is in these suburban communities. But then y'all walk around and talk about, well, why can't your yard look like my yard? Because I ain't got that extra ching-ching in my pocketbook in order to keep my yard. But I do, but I'm not everybody. I'm talking generically here. But let's go on what this report did. It says, in results, suggested one of the main causes of urban violence was white racism. That's not Darnell Williams talking. And suggested that white America, this is the report, not me, bore much of the responsibility for black rioting and rebellion. It called to create jobs, create new housing, put a stop to de facto segregation, and order white to wipe out destructive ghetto. In order to do so, the report recommended the government programs to provide the needed services, to hire more diverse, more sensitive police forces, and notably to invest billions in housing programs aimed at breaking up residential segregation. I'll stop and put a punctuation point. So if people think that I'm crazy, I'm going to share with you just a snapshot of where we are around housing. And if people want to say, and I'm not going to even use the word race, I'm going to use two categories for you to understand. There were people who were advantage and people who were disadvantage or disparities. But the most important thing that I want to share to you were the policies that were put in place in order for, I believe, Baltimore in 1790 was the first city to come up with a plan to concentrate to keep black people restricted and confined. Other cities adopted that same policy. So therefore, when you look at where black communities exist today, that means that these are carryovers for centuries. That was not only the thing that they did. They used the red line. They would have a white people paper with all of the zip codes and where people lived. They would concentrate and they would draw a red line around it. And redlining means that anybody inside the red line wasn't going to get a loan. They called it restrictive covenants. If you were Jewish and you were black and you were Mexican, they were not going to sell their house to you. You were concentrated in these ghettos that were designed from the start to keep the poverty. And I have to throw this. And back in 68, I remember this, to the day that I die, they started to dumping drugs in the black communities and tried to blame it on the Black Panthers. So that was the FBI. They were instrumental in infiltrating and putting drugs and heroin in black communities across this nation. They used the separate and unequal. We can live together. Yeah, but we want to be separate and we want to be equal, they said. That's what the law said. But we canned out to be separate and unequal. They wanted to make sure that the black codes, the land grants, restrictive covenants were in full play. You don't know what that means is that when you go to buy a house, why do you think they used to use those testing cases? They would send a white couple out to rent an apartment. And they say, and they'll show them the apartment, and they would say, this is what it's going to cost. You show up with your, I can't say wife or husband today, you and your partner show up. Because today you have to be very, very sensitive. Everybody is not Adam and Eve. It could be Adam and Steve. And I'm okay with that because that's the choice. They love each other. They're going to take care of their families. They pay bills. They work, et cetera, et cetera. And we need to protect their rights just like we do ours. But that's not the point. The point is that you are going because you're black or you're Latino. Your maternal lingua is not accepted. And they won't show you the apartment. They say it's already been filled. But you send another white couple behind you, and they show them the apartment. Well, guess what? That's called discrimination based on race, based on ethnicity. But that stuff is happening today. And so people talk about, what do we want? We want this stuff to be fixed. We don't want to be judged by the color of our skin. I pay my bills on time. It hurts, but I got to pay them on time. Try to pay my taxes on time. And if I don't, I work out a plan with the IRS and pay them a little bit every week. Or every month or whatever. You get my point. But pay them. The point is that housing patterns were deliberately set up in this nation where black folks who live in these urban centers and then folks moved into the suburbs, they were given land grants. They were given, that's what the GI Bill was that really expanded the middle class of America. Anybody that came back from World War II was given when you got your DD-214, you can go get a VA loan so that you can buy a house. But then you got to remember, if I go to a house, I got a red line or I got a restrictive covenant. So I have to go where I can afford to live and where, and so those conditions were set up deliberately to keep us racially divided. Now, it's not all the way that now, because some people have moved out and moved on. But it used to be when we had to call the Harlem Renaissance, you could see the boxing stars, the entertainers, the people who are on stage, they live right in the same neighborhood. You could see them. So there was some models of people. We should not have the models in the black community to only be preachers, pimps, and prostitutes and drug dealers. Those are the models that were left when the people who had the means to move out, moved out. The teachers moved out. The principals moved out. Police officers and firefighters moved out. And so who do they see? They see the folks who are at the bottom of the well who are wreaking misery on them. Now, I'm not saying that that's across the board. I'm only giving you examples of where we see many of the ones who are walking around with wads of cash, honey, fast cars, living a life that's only going to be for 2 minutes before they end up in the pokey. But that's what these kids see. And then when they look at the movies, they see these things and see the videos, and they say, if I want to live this charmed life, this fabulous life, I got to act like them. That's all I'm saying. And if I'm wrong, email me. My email is dwilliams@ulem.org. dwilliams@ulem.org. If you want to comment, if you want to call me, 617-442-4519. Email me, call me if you have comments, or you can text me on Twitter. I'll give you my Twitter handle in a minute. But I'm off of Facebook. I haven't been on Facebook in 3 years. I got a pet peeve with Facebook, not because of what they do. It's just I like to control my own data. I will stop with the housing, but I would say to you, anybody, you go look at the federal, state, and local policies around housing. You look at the federal, state, and local policies, legislation around education. If you look at the federal, state, and local policies around wealth generation, we walked down those three buckets and we will come up with the same advantages and the disadvantages. And then we come up with the conclusions as to who benefited. Now listen to me and listen close. I did not mention race one time. I didn't say this binary discussion, white versus black. That's very limited in our thinking. I said advantage versus disadvantage. And if we put who is advantage and who is disadvantage, and then we come to the conclusion, and we'll never have to talk about race. We could talk about zip code, because these folks that lived in this zip code were advantage. Folks in this zip code were disadvantage. And here's the conclusion. Some of us in these zip codes that were disadvantaged got jacked up because this was the plan from the beginning. And I hope I'm making sense. This is Dr. D on the mic. I hope I'm making sense to y'all out there, because in order for me to sit here and talk for an hour about black history, about Martin Luther King Jr. and his 90th birthday and this Kerner Commission, all I'm doing is just giving you a snapshot. There has to be some changes, significant changes, where we have the moral courage to do what we know to get done. And here we are 51 years later, and the report says the report was ignored, rejected the Kerner Commission's recommendations. Here we are in 2018, 50 years later, we got these things that we're seeing. Fred Harris was he's the last living person, and this is what he said. Found the racial divide had grown in subsequent years with inner-city unemployment at the crisis level. The millennial breach found that decade following the current America progress on the principal fronts, the report dealt with race, poverty, race, poverty, and inner cities. Let me slow down. The progress stopped. And in some ways, it reversed by a series of economic shocks and trends and the government's actions and inaction. I got to say that again. It was reversed and it was stopped by a series of economic shocks and trends and the government's action and inaction. So these are not my words. These are the words of people who are making assessment. So we already know what the prescription is. Dr. King said it was a prescription for death and a prescription for life. That was 50 years ago. Here we are 51 years later, and we had other people who examined the report in the Divided Society, the Kerner Report, and the Color of Law, and we see that progress was made on many fronts. So I don't want you to walk away from this conversation being depressed, because I'm not. I still have hope for a better America, because I believe that many of us out there want to do what's right. We want to hold each other by our brothers and my sister's hands. We want to lift people up and give them a chance. I was given a chance. I was given a chance by people who did not look like me. There were white people and black people who helped me achieve where I'm at today. I was written off as somebody that would grow up not to be, and I'm gonna use their language. You, boy, you ain't gonna amount to nothing. Your little nappy head boy with run over shoes and tore up blue jeans. You are not worthy for America to invest in you. And so that was the message that I was given as a kid, not just, and I wasn't at home, that was outside of the home. But I'm here as a living witness, as a product and a beneficiary of Dr. King's dream, that if you give somebody an education, if you give somebody a job, and if you give somebody exposure and opportunity, don't open, open up the door and I get in there, I can prove it to myself that I'm redeemed because I'm an American citizen and I will salute the flag and I serve my country and I will serve my community. This is the Community Focus Program. Darnell, Dr. D in the house. You go out and have a blessed and informed day and a blessed week.
Community Focus.
Thanks for listening to Community Focus with Dr. Darnell Williams. Be sure to tune in next week for another segment of Community Focus.
Community Focus.
This is Sports Radio 93.7, WEEI and WEEI.com, Boston.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.